What's going on, Titans? We're back with another episode of Daily Titan Podcast. In case you don't remember, I'm Kabir Kansari, your assistant lifestyle editor, and I'm joined by my co-host,
Jaden Lovelady, the lifestyle editor. Get excited.
Get excited because today we're going to be diving into issue number 12 of volume 116 of the Daily Titan student newspaper. Today we got a couple stories for you, including a recap on the CSUF budget, a couple of election updates in Fullerton, a profile on student artist Abby Sunga, an opinion on self-care and cooking, as well as a sports story on both men and women's soccer and how they're doing.
All right, guys, let's get straight into it, because I've been hearing whispers among the people, okay?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I've been fearing for my job lately.
Me too. And do you wonder why?
I think it's because our editor-in-chief is in the room.
It might be.
Guys, like, I was on the podcast a while back, and you were fine.
Yeah, but now I'm scared. We haven't been here for a little while.
Yeah, man, today's a new day.
Today is a new day, but I think you'll be okay.
Hey, that was kind of a bar.
That's what I'm here for, bro.
Okay, yeah.
You That's know, all I do,
I
yeah.
think there's also something else that you're here for.
Oh, I did write a story.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So, I wrote about just CSUF's budget for this fiscal year in general. Alex Porter is the vice president of admin and finance, and he's also the chief financial officer at Fullerton. And he went and presented to the Academic Senate on Thursday, which the Academic Senate is basically a group, a legislative body of like made up of faculty and like admin and professors who kind of talk about things that are going on within CSUF. They get presentations sometimes, they decide on like legislative changes. But Porter came in and presented just on the CSUF budget. And there's kind of a lot going on there.
What's the budget like? What's the outlook on the budget right now?
So Fullerton's in a pretty good spot when it comes to the budget. The CSU, Fullerton's money comes from two different places. It comes from student tuition, and then it comes from money from the CSU. And the CSU gets their money from the state of California. And the state of California gave the CSU $75 million less this fiscal year than they were supposed to. And then those funds, or like lack thereof, are kind of allocated based on the size of university. So CSUF received about $7.4 million less this year than we were supposed to get. So that would constitute a deficit. But we have a fair amount of money in our reserves, which is basically like just money that we don't spend every year. We save. And part of the reason we save it is for economic uncertainty like this.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is that like a planned out thing that they saved for, or was this just like a general emergency fund?
I would say they classify it as, like, or they designate it as economic uncertainty, which is what it is, because the state of California, there's kind of layers, because we're CSUF in our little bubble here, right? And then there's the CSU system, which is, like, 22 other campuses. And then there's the state of California. And the state of California, this fiscal year, is in a $68 billion budget deficit.
Wonderful.
So
Wonderful.
We're broke.
Okay.
We're broke. And Alex Porter came and presented to Academic Senate last May about the same exact thing, and he actually thought they were going to be in a worse spot when it came to funding. And that's because, so the CSU gets amount of base funding from California every year. But Newsom and the CSU have agreed to what's called a compact agreement a couple years back, which is basically in layman's terms, Newsom saying, hey, you're going to enroll more people, and if you do, I will give you more money. And CSUF is the only CSU that really meets their enrollment targets.
I was going to say, doesn't the campus kind of over-enroll as well?
Yes, historically, yes.
Hey, shout out us.
Shout out over-enrollment.
It's because everybody wants to be like a Titan, you know what I'm saying?
Honestly, yeah.
Everyone
yeah.
just wants to put those tusks up, and you know
That's what
I
saying.
Respect it because
yeah.
I love
you
having
know,
my
And
my
it really does up. Take a Titan at the end of the day.
And you know what? So true.
So the over-enrollment is kind of a double-edged sword then, because it provides mm-hmm. more funding for us because we get more money from student tuition.
Yes.
But that also kind of impacts students more with like class scheduling, things like that, because it like increases the number of students taking up spots in classes.
It does. And based on what they said in Academic Senate, I'm not sure if that's something that administrators really realize or they are kept in mind, because they're in a spot where, especially because CSU tuition just went up. And it's going to go up by 34%, like, starting this year and over the next couple years.
Isn't it, like, 6% per year? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
So because they enroll people and because tuition is going up, they're going to get more money because of that. But also, the CSU changed the way it reallocates funding to, like, the schools. Alex Porter spoke about how he thinks that's because Mildred Garcia came into office. She's the CSU chancellor, and she started last year. And he thinks there's more of an accountability there. But essentially what it means is that schools who are meeting their enrollment targets or exceeding them, they're going to get more money. which means that we got more money because of that. Our and this is in the article, but our enrollment went up by like a percent and a half from last year, so like a percent and a half more students. But our funding from the CSU went up by over 10%, which is really interesting because Fullerton honestly is in a pretty good spot. And the admin really emphasized that at the meeting. But coupled with like just the CSU being in its own deficit and California being in a budget deficit, like campus admin have to plan. And another kind of piece of this too is that like, remember how I spoke about the $68 billion budget deficit, which is a lot of money. Something that campus admin is kind of grappling with right now is that Newsom has proposed an 8% budget cut, nearly 8% for next fiscal year. And everything else in California was cut by 8% this year, except the CSU and the UC system. Newsom and the governor's office are kind of given like higher education a break to plan for that 8% budget deficit. But that's something that even the CSU Board of Trustees are still trying to figure out a way around. And Roshan, President Roshan emphasized in the meeting that, you know, it's not set in stone, but it is something campus admin has have to be aware of.
I read in the article there was a quote about a deferral being deferred. Could you explain a little bit more? I was kind of confused on that one.
Yeah, so I kind of touched on it very, very briefly earlier, but essentially when campus admin presented to the Academic Senate in May, they thought that Newsom was going to defer money that was supposed to go to the CSU as part of that compact agreement, which is basically the agreement between the CSU and Newsom being like, you enroll more, we'll give you more money. But because the state of California is in such like a budget crisis right now, Newsom or the governor's office at the time didn't really feel like they wanted to give that money to the CSU. So they had told the CSU, like, don't expect this money. Don't expect this $240 million. But between May and when the budget had to be finalized, Newsom, the governor's office, decided to only cut $75 million. Mm. And that deferral was going to be deferred to the next fiscal year.
No way.
Yes.
Crazy how they did
so that. So 25-26, believe it or not, we will get less money from the CSU. So that's kind of what it means by the deferral being deferred. And there are a lot of moving parts with this. It's like kind of three separate budgets all like working together. But what they really emphasize that the state of California is in a not a great spot, but Cal State Fullerton is in a good spot because of the hard work that the campus admin have done to maintain the reserves. And, you know, the reserves are finite and I don't think they know what's going to happen, but they're just trying to be as responsible as they can. Which is all they really can do at the end of the day.
Do you happen, like, would you happen to know, like, kind of where the money that we did get would be going in terms of programs and things like that?
Yeah, so for this fiscal year, 24-25, there was nearly a $57 million budget increase, which is about 10% of the budget. And so that comes from, so 66% of that came from, like, the state money. Essentially, the money that was appropriated to us because we over-enrolled. 34% is coming from the tuition and fee revenue increase, which is the increased tuition that we all had to pay this semester. And there are a lot of different ways that money is being used. A little over 13 million of that is used for strategic enrollment growth. So we got money for enrolling people that's going right back into enrolling more people.
Sick.
Amazing.
Yeah, which is awesome for us on a small campus.
Expecting more campus tours.
Yeah, shout out. $10 million of that is going to funded portion of compensation.
That would be like salaries and things like that, or?
Yes, okay. I believe so. That was the category that the CSU didn't give us money in. So that like $7.5 million they didn't give us, it was in that category.
Okay.
So some of that money is going to the same thing. Some of that is going to things like compensation cost increase, which is like the CFA recently.
Oh, that's what the strike and like the, like
yeah.
They renegotiated the contract and things like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, so okay. they got a salary increase. And obviously that will cost more money from the schools because they are paying their professors a
nice
more tenable wage.
That is a good bit of information.
Yeah, and I think it's a way that we appreciate the money being used, right?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, we are here to learn, low-key.
Yes.
Wait, yeah. I've low-key heard that before, too, yeah. That
like,
could be argued.
We're students.
And what do students do?
Learn.
No way.
I know, what a concept. And then different, like, healthcare premiums, liability and property insurance, a lot of graduation initiative, things like that. There are some things like CalNAGPRA, compliance and Title IX that, less money is allocated towards, but those things are required by the CSU. But yeah, that's kind of a super simple explanation of the CSUF budget.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel enlightened.
Shout out.
I feel a lot smarter and a lot more informed. What's your favorite thing that you've learned recently?
Honestly, I really enjoyed reporting for this budget story. I mean, I just went to the Academic Senate meeting. Like, I didn't really do any other, like, interviews. But I listened to the hour and a half long recording. I read the presentations. And things like this are fun because there is so much more reporting that, like, you can pull from to learn. Because, like, I was looking at CSU budget reports. I was looking at, like, because the CSU trustees have to, like, figure out what they're going to do, right? When California doesn't give them. Or when California gives them less money.
Yeah. Right.
It is interesting. It's like a big game of chess.
Were there any,
basically,
like,
yeah.
Were there any numbers that, like, kind of surprised you? Like, seeing, like, whoa, like, this is what the budget looks like?
I think the biggest number that surprised me is that, like, I talked about it before, but how our enrollment went up by 1%. But our budget, like, the percent increase was, like, 10%.
Mm. Yeah, the ratio there is, like, very interesting to see.
Which Alex Porter talked about this when he was presenting, but he was kind of saying how, like, I mean, it's good for us, but it's, like, we're taking money away from other CSUs because right. that pool of money is finite. Mm. So when we're taking a higher proportion of that money based on our enrollment, the schools that aren't enrolling are getting less money than, like, is proportional. But also they're not enrolling. And that's honestly, like, even Roshan emphasis, that is, like, the name of the game, to be honest.
Yeah. I was going to say they got to do more campus tours over there.
Yeah. Hey.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, is that it for you?
Oh, that's
I think that's kind of all I got.
Okay, I'm sorry. That really did you in. Yeah.
Oh, wait, before you go, favorite word in a headline recently?
Word local, you throw in a headline community, recently? Artistry, diverse.
Oh, thank you. Those are my favorite, too.
I know.
Yes, thank you.
You, like, I passed it. You passed it along.
Okay, you can go now.
Okay, thank you. Thanks
so
for
much.
Having me on your podcast.
Yeah, thanks for coming, Miss Editor and Queen. Goodbye.
Thank you. Shout out.
Hey Titans, this is Sergio Gonzalez, sports editor of the Daily Titan. We're opening applications for next semester's staff. We need editors and assistants to help edit and write stories for our news, lifestyle, opinion, sports, photo, layout, multimedia, and copy desk. If any of these interest you, head to dailytitan.com and fill out an application today. We work hard, but we also have a lot of fun in the office, so please don't hesitate to apply and join us.
All right, y'all. So in a very Kyle Korver-esque move, we actually had to trade Emily for Isaiah, our other exec, a new printer, and some cash considerations. But now that Isaiah's here, we're going to have him tell us about the congressional districts. Isaiah, what's up with that?
Yeah, so in California's 45th congressional district, which includes part of Orange County and a little bit of LA County, they're still counting those votes, obviously. But incumbent Republican Representative Michelle Steele, she's currently in the lead over Derek Tran, who's the Democratic challenger in that race. And it's too close to call. I believe in Orange County, Steele leads Tran by more than 10,000 votes. Right now, she's holding 52% of those votes compared to Tran, who only holds 47.94%. But that's really close in Orange County.
So, Isaiah, with this being such a contentious district, how do you think this is going to affect, like, the balance of the House?
Well, this race in particular, it's obviously one of the country's, like, closest pivotal races for control. As it stands right now, the House of Representatives, so the GOP, like, they hold 214 seats as of today of recording. The Democrats only hold 203. So you need 218 for majority, obviously, in the House of Representatives. So there's still... The Republicans still need four seats, and then the Democrats need obviously a lot more. So this race in particular is really important. I would say in California, if the Democrats sweep, which is not likely, and it's looking like it's favored for the Republican Party, if the Democrats sweep California, obviously they would have majority. If not, Republicans, as it stands as of recording, it's looking like it's standing for Republican control of the House.
Word. What's it looking like in the other districts we have?
In the other districts, so in District 46, Luke Correa, who was projected to win the race, he's the Democratic representative. He's the incumbent. He already won his race, according to the Associated Press. He won at 11:51 p.m. As on election night, defeating his opponent, David Pan, who's a Republican. He won with, as it stands right now, with 70% of the votes in, 62.5% over David Pan's 37.5%. It was a huge margin. I doubt David Pan would have won this race regardless. But Luke Correa, obviously, since he's the incumbent, he obviously was the favorite.
Do you have any like other like notes on like the races that are happening around Fullerton?
Yes. So there are three districts obviously still up for election. So District 1, the current incumbent, Fred Jung, he's leading Matthew Truck, so was obviously the opponent, with 71.98% of the votes as of today. And then Mayor Dunlap is also leading former council member Jan Florida with 63.4% of the vote in District 2. District 1 is not a hugely surprising race. Again, considering it's an incumbent versus Matthew Trucksaw. Matthew Trucksaw, his background, he's a management expert. He's more into business. So, again, not huge in the political world compared to Fred Jung, who's already like, obviously is the incumbent
right.
in that district. District 2 in Fullerton. So this one's a little interesting because Jan Flores, she's the former mayor. And she's running up against the current mayor, Nick Dunlap. So he already has that advantage going to District 2.
Right.
So in District 4, Jamie Valencia, she's maintaining her narrow lead of 45 votes over Vivian Jaramillo. Valencia, she's leading with 35.54% of the vote and 2,900 votes. Jaramillo, she's trailing behind at nearly 35%, almost 3,000 votes. Linda Whitaker, the wife of incumbent District 4 council member Bruce Whitaker, she's third behind Jaramillo at 18.67%. And 1,532 votes. Scott Markowitz, he's last in voting with 10.8% and 886 votes. So he's dead last in District 4.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. DME, Isaiah Mallory.
Of course.
You know, I heard from some sources
mm-hmm.
that election coverage is going to be updated on our website at dailytitan.com.
Mm-hmm.
Might this be true?
And it is correct. We'll be updating these accounts and races throughout the week on dailytitan.com, and you could also catch us on Instagram. We'll be posting all the updates there too as well.
Yeah, it's like I just said that.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks.
Just fact
get it out now.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Okay. Bye. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Moving on to someone a little bit more local to our campus, we actually have a lifestyle story, which is a profile on Abby Sunga, a student and singer here at Cal State Fullerton.
Yeah, so I actually wrote this week, and it was a really cool experience, to be honest, because I have been wanting to do a profile at our desk for a while now, and it was cool to have a subject that was, like, so clearly passionate about what she does, and she, for the record, is a independent artist right now, and she just released, actually today when we're recording this on Sunday, November 10th, she just released her sophomore EP, What Do I Do? And it was just really interesting to get to know, like, more about Abby. And like for profile stories, we have to talk about at least two people who are like close in the subject's life. So it was cool to learn just about her experience from her perspective, as well as like people close to her and like how they watched her grow as an artist. It was just cool to see someone like near my age go for what they want, you know, like unapologetically.
It's inspiring to see that kind of on a local level, because like you always hear stories about people that are like doing it big, but they're so far outside of your sphere. But to be kind of like in the same atmosphere as someone that's doing something that's like such a dream for them,
mm-hmm.
it's inspiring because it's like that could genuinely be you. That could be you with what your interest is.
Yeah, for sure. And like it was really cool to hear her talk about her journey as an artist too, because she seems very humble about it. Like a quote that she gave me was that, you know, at her first release party, when she released her first single a few years ago, she told a crowd of like 60 people, if tonight is as far as I get in the music industry, it's enough for me. And that really just stuck with me because it's really cool to see an artist be humble about their creativity and their like ability to succeed for themselves. Because I feel like a lot of times in an industry like this, some people are just so fun to talk to because they're the exact opposite of that.
No,
so
yeah.
It was really refreshing to talk to someone who was like super chill about it.
It's nice to see someone that has the ability to kind of perceive the journey they're on and appreciate it for what it is at the time of the journey, instead of like focusing on like, how do I get farther? How do I get higher? How do I get like more of that? So to see someone be appreciative of like the atmosphere they're in and like the crowd they run with currently.
Yeah.
It's very nice and refreshing.
And like, I mean, I don't actually know if I've said this on record before. I hope to work in the music industry, and I already have like a few years under my belt and like just being present in it. But like, it was refreshing to talk to a musician who does it genuinely for the love of the game, not to just get farther. Anyway, but yeah, shout out Abby. I wish her the best in her career. And if you're interested, her EP is out now everywhere. What Do I Do?
chopping it up with a new topic about self-care and cooking, we're going to be transitioning over to our opinion desk for a story written by Catherine Habibi, which is about the importance of self-cooking and how it can better yourself.
Yeah. Shout out Ms. Habibi. She is, in fact, an opinion assistant.
Indeed she is. But yeah, the article basically focuses on how cooking can be a form of therapy and how it's a great way to spend your time and the benefits of it, such as, like, you know, how it's a form of self-care and also the neurological connection between your brain and your diet.
That was a really interesting part of the story, actually. Like, reading through it, her sources were really good, and they were, like, they had such interesting things that I, like, I don't know. It's stuff you consider, like, yeah, everyone is like, yeah, your diet affects your everyday life. But, like, to hear an expert speak on, like, it genuinely affects the way that you perceive yourself and others. That is very interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of like that phrase, like, you are what you eat. Like, yeah. you feel the effects of the food you have. Like, when I eat fast food, I feel greasy, I feel heavy, I feel, like, kind of sluggish and stuff. Me, personally, I feel like I kind of resonate with this article a lot because I've spent time, like, cooking for others and cooking for myself. I worked in a couple of kitchens. And I feel like in those moments, I didn't really appreciate cooking for what it was, because it was more of like a chore and a task of, like, you have to get this done, you have to do this. Whereas when I was able to kind of step into my own apartment and step into my own kitchen, I kind of had the ability to, like, do what I want and, like, really just treat it how I want to treat it. And that genuinely did make an impact on me, because, like, I found therapy in that. And also, like, I don't know, I like cooking. Cooking has always been, like, a big part of my life, so I'm glad that it kind of, like, got platformed in this article, because it's such an important thing for people to understand, not just as a skill, but as a way to, like, take care of yourself.
Yeah, especially because, like, it's so, like, normalized for our age group to just rush past cooking. And, like, not just because we have, like, the dining hall for people who live on campus or, like, stuff like that, but, like, I don't know. I feel like when you do, like, cooking is an art form, I would argue, and it is definitely a form of, like, self-expression and just, like, enjoyment, you know what I'm saying? And I feel like people always discredit it because they see it like a chore.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be that way. Like, if you get started with, like, easy recipes, easy ingredients, and, like, stuff that fits your budget and lifestyle, obviously, I feel like it could have a very positive impact, you know, is the point of the entire article.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know. I feel like a lot of people learn how to cook differently, and, like, there's different ways people are taught to cook. Like, I never got taught to make recipes. My mom never, like, sat me down and showed me how to make this item and this item and this item. My mom just kind of showed me, like, oh, these vegetables go good with these vegetables, or, like, these seasonings go good with this kind of thing, and, like, that goes with that. So she kind of gave me all the pieces of the puzzle for me to put together how I wanted. So that kind of, like, that kind of helped me build confidence in the kitchen, because I had, like, the basic skills to build my foundation off of. And then I found, like, a couple recipes online, and I found, like, a couple, like, cookbooks and things like that that I felt like I could handle.
Yeah.
Because, like, I'm not out here making beef Wellington. I'm not following Chef Ramsay's recipes. I'm not Anthony Bourdain. I'm just some guy with a skillet and a nice spatula. And I'm doing my best. And a dream. And I'm doing my best with it.
Yeah.
But you know what? I keep myself fed and I keep my friends fed. And that makes me happy. So
shout out.
Shout out. For those that don't cook enough, cook more. And for those that do cook, cook more.
All right, guys. It's time for me to get a little truth roll. And this is not unknown knowledge, but I don't understand sports that well. So I'm going to have to ask Emily to come back to mansplain it to me. I'm so sorry. Welcome back, Emily.
Thank you for having me back. Actually, I don't know if you guys knew this, but I used to be sports editor of the Daily Titan. Before that, I was deputy sports editor. And before that, I was assistant sports editor.
I thought you just spawned in the EIC chair.
Unfortunately, no. I had to earn it. You know, it's interesting because I was sports editor during last soccer season. And I remember when both of our soccer teams earned the number one overall seed because they had the best record.
Well, did history repeat itself this time?
It did and it didn't. It did not in the sense that both of us, like, both teams were six seeds in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But it did, unfortunately, repeat itself in the sense that we were both first round exits. It is heartbreaking, honestly, because both soccer teams were so promising last season. And it was the first time ever that they had both won the conference, like, in the same year at Cal State Fullerton.
Like, ever?
Ever.
Wow.
In Cal State Fullerton history. Both soccer teams had never won the conference before. And it was a big deal. And they got a bye because they were number one overall seed, but then they were eliminated in the first round. Or their first game, rather. And this time around, they were both eliminated in the first round again. With women's soccer, it's interesting, too, because this is the fourth straight season that they've been eliminated in the first round of the playoffs. The women's soccer game particularly was heartbreaking because Kaylee Noble, who is one of their better players, to be honest with you, she's a forward. This is her second year. She won, like, freshman of the year last year. She had a corner kick, and the Titans were down by one. There were 15 seconds left. So if she had, like, gotten the corner kick to where it needed to be, they could have gotten a goal. And I think they pulled the goalie Ranson, too, to have an extra man out there. And she kicked the ball into the side of the net from the corner. And the season was over.
Just like that.
And that, the article says, like, that is representative of how the season went. Mm. It was just like, they weren't as good in the regular season. They had a 4-3-3 record. They were just mid. And it's, both teams were mid.
Yeah, how did men's soccer fare before their elimination?
Men's soccer, they had the opportunities in the game. They played against UCI on Wednesday, and they lost 1-0. They had opportunities. They just were not able to capitalize, which is honestly a theme of the season as well.
Yeah.
Because you can get shot attempts, but if they're not good shot on goal attempts, then they're kind of all for naught.
Yeah.
Right? And men's soccer, they will be in an interesting spot next season because they have three seniors. Well, they have more than three seniors, but three of their most important seniors, Eric Serrano, Roberto Ordóñez, and Sully Ba, they're like the three forwards, right? And they have led the team, or they have led the team in points in each of the last two seasons. And now they're all graduating.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that, because I remember last season, men's soccer, like, across the team, there were a lot of player honors that got given out.
Yes.
And this season, it was just one player on our team that got, personal honors.
Serrano got midfield of the year. We got a couple people on the All-Big West second team.
Okay.
We had the talent, for sure. We just weren't able to put it together. We ended with the conference with a 3-2-4 record, which, honestly, like, we could have done a lot better. Other than those three graduates, though, for men's soccer, there's lots of young talent on the team, and they did have highlights over the season. Like, they beat number 6 UCLA, so there were flashes. Ultimately, though, for both soccers in both years, they just were not able to put it together. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that's just how Cal State Fullerton sports go.
Hey, man. I've heard that. Yes.
You know, sometimes the Tusks are up, and other days the Tusks are down.
At least they got some wins. At least they haven't lost 14 games straight. But we don't need to get into that.
We'll save that for another day.
I think it's time for me to actually go now.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm kind of tired of
this. Yeah, someone grab that mic.
Yeah, low-key.
All right, Titans. It's looking like it's that time again where we wrap up the pod. And you know what? You don't have to go home, but you cannot stay here, okay? I want to go home. So, while you're out on campus this week, be sure to pick up a copy of our beloved Daily Titan, or check us out at dailytitan.com to read the articles mentioned. Thank you all for listening, and as always, if you like us, we love you.
All right, y'all. I don't know if y'all remember, because I'm not sure how the ship got ran when Ruben and Brian took over. But in case you don't know what time it is, it's time for us to get thankful. So first of all, a special thanks to our executive producers, Isaiah Malari and Emily Wilson, our producer, Luis Vizcaino, our assistant producers, Raniel Santos and Michelle King, and Bijan Shusarisade for the amazing outro music that you hear right now. We once again want to thank all of y'all for listening to our podcast. I want to thank my co-host, Jaden Lovelady, for being on here with me. And I also want to thank myself for all the work we put into the paper. So yeah, we'll catch y'all next time. We'll see y'all soon. Stay tuned at DC Pod and pick up that paper. Peace.